Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Merkle Media. Hey everybody, it's that time of the year again. Angel Tree Farms in Alberta's PA is a 501c3 nonprofit Christmas tree farm benefiting the Pediatric Cancer Foundation in Lehigh Valley. They're at it again. All the volunteers are out there. They have a great selection of trees, pictures with Santa, cookies, cocoa, and more. They're open 12 to 5 on Fridays, 9 to 5 Saturdays and Sundays from Black Friday until Christmas. You can get more information from the Angel Tree Farms Facebook page or at angeltreefarms.org. They're located at 7931 Spring Creek Road, Alberta, Pennsylvania, 18011. Angel Tree Farms is growing generously in the community. Look them up on the Facebook page. If you feel like you're too far away, you don't want to come to the farm, take a look about donating. It's a worthwhile cause.
Check out Angel Tree Farms at Angel Tree Farms Facebook page or at angeltreefarms.org. Thank you and have a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holiday.
It in park, threw open the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, crossed the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people who really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going hot," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to Hammer Lane Legends. I'm Brian Merkel.
I'm Brian Shipper.
And I'm Mike Dre.
If you have a crazy and wild story you would like to share with us from the road or have a conversation with us about your experiences as a truck driver on the road or a Lyft driver or an Uber driver, go ahead and contact us at hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast@protonmail.com. Or go to the hammerlanelegends.com webpage, hit the contact section, get a hold of us. Either way works for us, just get a hold of us. We want to hear from you. We want to have you on the show. We want to have a conversation with you. Chipper, tell them about the Buy Me a Coffee.
Keep us fueled, keep us caffeinated at buymeacoffee.com/hammerlane. It's a virtual tip jar. If you like what we're doing, you feel like leaving us a little howdy-howdy tip, go do it. Have at it. Enjoy.
Have at it indeed. Today, we're talking with Joe. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, guys. Thank you.
That's fantastic. It's fantastic to have you on. And you know what? You're better off if you can't see.
You know, I've got that in-between, you know, thing.
No, we Shipper had his peepers fixed. All right. And he's got new lenses on him and everything. It's kind of, you know, it's amazing. It's kind of weird, but you know, he actually sees better now. So, which is, you know, if he's sitting across from me, it's not a good thing. So, all right. It's okay.
Well, the smaller my phone, the better, by the sounds of it.
It is precisely. So, Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us how you kind of got into the trucking industry, a little bit about your experience getting into it, and
sure.
How long you've been driving and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I first started driving when I was 19. I got a CDL because I was in school. I was in university, and my dad died, unfortunately. And, you know, I'm from a working-class family, and I had to pay my way through school. So a family friend, you know, helped me get a CDL and found me a job for a mail contractor. So I drove trucks, you know, delivering in the morning, the way those usually worked, or at least the way they did back then. I deliver out to smaller towns from a small city in western Massachusetts in the morning, and I'd have about 5 or 6 hours off, And then I come back and I deliver, I take the mail from the small towns back into that city in the afternoon. And I worked 4 days a week, you know, sometimes 5 days a week. And in between, I had time to still go to university.
Wow.
So I did that to pay my way through school. After that, I went off and did other things. But I always kept that golden ticket in my back pocket. And I realized that having a CDL, I earned more, you know, driving, if you want to break it down to an hourly rate, back then, than I did in my first couple of jobs with my degree. So it was always in the back of my mind. And I'll be honest with you, when I'd have those really tough days at work and things weren't going well and stress levels were high, I would often wake up in the morning and be thinking about how much I loved driving through those small towns in a big truck.
Yeah. It is crazy, isn't
yeah,
it? That's one of the draws to the job is the number one is the paycheck.
Sure.
I mean, you know, when you look at this and doing what you're doing, it's the thing that I think we all kind of get stuck
without
into.
You know? I often tell people that you know, this sounds a little bit, you know, exaggerated, but I don't think it is. That job saved me. You know, having that job, I wouldn't have been able to afford to, you know, go to school and do the things I wanted to do if I didn't, you know, have that behind me. So I've always been so thankful that I was introduced to this job.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, as you know, I feel the same way with doing this for a living. Now, I wasn't in school or nothing like that when I learned to drive. I was actually laid off.
There you go.
And you know, when the bottom fell out in '92, end of '92 or whatever, I was like, well, what am I going to do? So I was hanging around, and '93 came, and I still wasn't. You know, there was nothing in installing security systems. And I would just wound up, okay, what am I going to do? I got kids, got a wife, you know, got to make money.
Well, that's kind of the way I came back to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah. Because I was gone for, I didn't drive trucks for, I've never really added it up, but, you know, over 30 years, I went off and I did other things. And, you know, I lived in China for almost 30 years. I lived in Hong Kong.
Wow.
And my wife was a flight attendant. At that point, she's from the Philippines. We were both living in Hong Kong. And she took an early retirement from work. And I thought, well, listen, I think I'll go back to the U.S. We have a house in the Philippines. And, you know, I know that ultimately I'll retire back there. But I thought, what am I going to do? And I wanted to find a job where I could keep a foot in Asia, you know, and not, you know, totally lose track of that. And, you know, most normal jobs, you're going to get, what, three weeks of vacation a year to travel back. And that's just not enough.
Right.
And as I said, I always kept that, you know, license up. I think I did finally let it lapse around 2012, I think. But I knew I could go back to it. And I said, well, you know, I should look into trucking again. So 6 years ago, I came back out and I got my CDL back, and I've been flatbedding ever since.
Wow. And do you prefer flatbedding, or have you tried, you know, when you came back at it, did you do any van or anything like that, dry van?
Coming back at it, I have been flatbed all the way. And you know, I very intentionally did it that way. I'd done a little bit of flatbed as well when I was younger. And, you know, it pays a little bit better. You know, that's one thing. Another thing I like the schedule better. I knew that would suit me a little bit more. That, you know, as you guys probably know, we tend to deliver early mornings up to early afternoons, and it's pretty rare that we, you know, have to do it otherwise. My hat is off to guys who drive in, especially those reefer guys bouncing all over the clock. I honestly don't know if I could do it. You know, I think, you know, they good on them that they can tolerate those schedules, because I don't think I could. I don't mind the hard work. You know, I'm a strong guy. I was always fit and did a lot of things. So a little bit heavy now, but, you know, that's a truck driver's dilemma, isn't it?
It sure is.
But I, you know, I like getting out. I like working. I like the puzzle that we have to solve doing flatbed too.
Yeah. Oh, I can. Yeah. From my aspect of things, I look at it like, my hat's off to you guys, because yours is a lot more work intensive. Getting things ready to go, getting it, you know, everything strapped, getting it, you know, parked and all that. And then undoing all that when you get to where we just, you know, roll up and, like, you know, we're all, you know, basically line haul drive.
Yeah. It's nice weather out, sunshine, and it doesn't seem kind of nice, but when it's, you know, 10 below, blowing snow.
On those beautiful days, it's a pleasure being out there. But 5 o'clock in the morning in the dark in Wyoming in January, and I've had plenty of those mornings too where my tarps are so frozen. You know, I remember pulling a lumber load into a Lowe's DC, and any guys who've done flatbed will know this one too. But when you pull your tarps off, they've hardened into the shape of your lumber load. So there's absolutely there's first off, getting them off is enough of a challenge. Once you get them off, there's no way you're going to fold them up. So you know, you tend to learn that you just have to kind of crumple them into a shape, get on your knees and just fall on them to crunch them over. Lift them up again and fall again until you finally get a great big ball of tarp. Strap it to your deck and wait for the sun to come out and heat it up a little bit. Those mornings are pretty terrible, I have to admit. That's when you say, why the heck did I ever think I wanted to become a flatbedder, man? But those beautiful afternoons when we're out there, it's a joy. It's a joy doing physical work, you know?
Yeah. Oh, you know, I guess that's kind of one of the things that you kind of miss doing what we do, you know, because we're working in the middle of the night. So you don't really get out. You don't move much. You know, you drive for 4 or 5 hours. You get out of your truck, you drop, you hook, you drive for 4 or 5 hours, you know,
it's tough, man.
It's the monotony of it, you know, and it's the stress. I mean, that's a stressful, just, it's funny. It's one of those things. And I don't mean to just an aside, when you talk to people and they're like, oh, you know, you're just driving a truck. I mean, you're just driving. Okay, get in your car and drive for 5 hours and see how you feel.
Exactly. You know, I've had some interesting conversations with taxi drivers. And, you know, those guys get it. They get that side of it. That anybody can just drive around in their car for 3 hours. But do it for 10, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And that mental tiredness really comes into things. It's not an easy job. And couple it with you guys, you know, pulling through the night and then, you know, sleeping days, sleeping nights and mixing it together. Man, I don't know how you do it. That's as bad as my wife before, you know, having constant jet lag for 30 years. That's really a lot what it's like for you guys. So my hat's off to you. It really is. I can't do it.
I've never even thought about that as far as like, you know, what you know, being a flight attendant, like with your wife and that kind of stuff, or anything.
No set schedule with
those, I mean, their schedule's kind of crazy, you know.
Yeah, she was jet lagged for 30 years, basically.
Yeah,
constantly, you know, flying where she was, the, you know, out of Hong Kong had been a British colony, so there was no domestic flying. It's a city state of a sort. So all of her flights tended to be long haul flights to different time zones, and boy, you don't physically get used to jet lag. You just suffer through it and learn some techniques to make the suffering better, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, my word.
Was she? You know, I know the pilots were, you know, subject to hours of service and that.
Yeah,
right? But stewardesses? I don't think so.
There's an organization called ICAO, and I can't remember exactly what the acronym stands for, but there are some standards, and then different countries have different standards as well. So the company she worked in, she flew at that point. I think things change a lot, but I think her schedule allowed her 76 hours of flying time per month, which sounds very little, but that's not including all the planning meetings and trip prep and stuff like that, and you know that they do as well. But she thinks we work heck of a lot more than, you know, they ever did. But
that's what I was thinking. You know, we're allowed 70 hours in a week.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're flying back and forth. They're just walking. You know, doing food and everything else. Right. Hey, jump off this 10-hour flight, turn around, pop this one. You're on your way back or whatever.
I'll tell you, they both have their stresses. Though I remember my wife once got stuck on a tarmac in New York City for 36 hours.
Welcome to LaGuardia.
For 36 hours, and the toilets had had filled up and overgone. And, you know, I can't remember what the issue was, but I think it was a storm where everyone was stuck out on the tarmac. And, you know, she's got to work through all that and people complaining and everything else. She actually comes on the truck with me. She was on the truck with me during COVID for about 5 months, which I have to tell you is longer than anyone should have their wife on a truck. I think she'd agree with me on that one. But she loves it. You know, she can sleep in the bunk. and she's used to cooking in a small place, you know, in the galley. And boy, she put 25 pounds on me in those, you know, my buddies would laugh at me. I'd have pre-trip meals and mid morning snacks. And I had first class service there for a while.
Yeah. That's fantastic, man. Flight attendant on board, you know,
she loved it. She'd sit in that seat and watch the world go by. She really likes being on the truck.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
I think
great.
That's neat.
Oh, man, well, look at it this way. She can actually see the world go by, not when she's in the plane.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. You know, it's a funny thing. She
world's an inch big.
Yeah. She loved sleeping in the bunk while I was driving because it really reminded her of sleeping in the crew, whatever, beds or racks or whatever they call them. That sort of movement and bouncing around. Boy, she sleeps like a log when she's back there.
Wow. But, you know, it's funny, too, because, you know, to us, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about this, and Shipper said about our 70-hour work week, and I was like, yeah. But, you know, when you're talking, like, if you were, like, a domestic flight, you know, flight attendant here in the States, I mean, the longest flight you're probably going to have is 3 hours, you know, going across the country. So if you can do 70 hours in a month or 76 hours a month, I mean, you got, you know, 3 hours, 3 hours, 3 hours. That's a lot of flight. That's a lot of flying schedule.
Well, add on to that, you know, for her, a New York flight, depending on, you know, the prevailing winds and direction, I think they could be as long as 17 hours over the pole to Asia.
Can you imagine that?
That's a long piece of work. Yeah.
That is.
I've done it as a passenger plenty of times, but, you know, never working, obviously.
I don't, you know, and I think about that stuff, and I think, I don't know if I could even do it as a passenger.
As long as I've been in a plane, it's 2.5 hours, and it was driving me nuts. Yeah, I can't imagine.
It's a long flight. It's a long flight.
I can imagine. I guess that's the beauty of a cruise. You know?
Yeah, we went on many cruises. You know? The longest I had to fly was down to Florida. Most of the time, we got on in Bayonne, New Jersey, just drove there. Didn't even have to get on a plane.
There you go. That's
awesome, isn't it? The ship is great because your hotel goes with you.
Yes.
Like an airplane. There you go. That's our life right there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a trucker. Yeah. You got your hotel sitting right behind you there.
You know, I get my whole thing of, you know, because I bounced around and I've lived in different places and different countries. When people ask me, you know, the most common question we get when you get off a truck is, where are you from? Where do you live? And I usually just tell people right there, you know, in the back of that truck. That's basically where I live now. Yeah.
And it's amazing. And you know, the thing with being in the truck is that the food is not as good as it is on a ship.
Oh,
you know
what I mean? I'm sure. I can guarantee you that. You
know, where you're stopping for food is not going to be as good as it is on a ship. You know, a truck driver palate is.
Boy, those long days. A pot of rice and a can of chili. That's the tired trucker meal in my truck.
I'm home every day and I pack my lunch to come to work. I can't go into you spend a small fortune to eat out on the road.
Oh my word.
I try not to, and it's, you know, I don't always cook on the truck, but I do a fair amount of the time. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I mean, just health wise. I mean, you think a truck stop. You know, and then you know why truck drivers look like they do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So that's true.
You can't blame the truck stop totally.
Without a doubt. Well, without a doubt.
The willing participant of the truck driver. Right?
To it, right? Triple cheeseburger jumped right in my mouth, dude. I don't know.
French fries. You know, I don't know.
I was picking up the salad, that cheeseburger jumped in.
Right.
Yeah. That's perfect. He was just forcing it on me. It's crazy.
That's right.
But when you were in China, what kind of stuff were you doing in China, if I can ask?
Yeah, sure. When I first went to Hong Kong. Hong Kong was a British colony at that point. The colony reverted to China in 97. I went there in 92, and I went over for 6 months. My brother was a journalist there, and you know, he said, you know, the door's open if you want to come over and have a visit. So I thought I'd go over for 6 months and have some fun, and I came back 30 years later. So, when I first went, I got a job, you know, I got a few jobs working in bars. I was a doorman, I was a bouncer. And I had a lot of fun for about 6 months, 8 months. And then I had an opportunity. I had a job working as in an NGO, a nonprofit by American, you know, terms. And I ended up doing that for most of my time in Hong Kong. I worked for a drugs NGO. So I worked with people who had drug problems, but I also worked kind of advocating drug policy things and doing a lot of training as a drugs specialist, I guess you could say.
Wow.
I did that. And then I worked for a humanitarian aid organization as well toward the end of that. Ultimately, I was the president of this organization, pretty well known around the world, of the Hong Kong, of our Hong Kong office, about 30, 40 people. So I did a mix of NGO work, nonprofit work, mostly while I was there.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. That is fascinating.
That was interesting. You know, it's really interesting work. I mean, you know, incredibly interesting work, but it doesn't pay well. I earn more now as a truck driver than I ever did doing that.
Yeah.
To be honest. I'm in a pretty good place. I'm in a good company right now, too. I think we do pretty well. But yeah, I earn more here now by a bit than I did with a lot more responsibility and a lot more stress doing that other work in Asia.
Sure. Yeah. And I would imagine that the cultural differences, you know, being over there and doing the things that you're doing and all it's got to be a fascinating thing.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I think I got a kind of a feel for it that I noticed a lot of people who are expatriates, you know, living in another country. A lot of people only last a year or two before they want to go home. And I think the challenge to them, a lot of people, is just everything is so different and it's all coming at you, especially in the beginning. It's really stressful. And I think some people just don't like it. You know, they like what they're used to and they kind of like home. And that's not a bad thing. You know, I think, you know, that's fine. But I know for me, I always found it kind of interesting. So if you put me in a new place, those differences and those conflicts and those things, I found them, you know, they were kind of fun for me. So I enjoyed being, you know, in different countries and having to learn different things and see different stuff. It was just a constant game for me, and I liked it. So I stuck on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I imagine the challenges are, you know, it's got to be something.
Language challenges and cultural challenges, all kinds of things. And then marrying a woman from another country as well, and, you know, that – it's just constant cultural, you know, change and differences and right at me. And I think it's fun for the most part.
Sure. And I imagine she spoke English.
My wife's English is fantastic. It's as good as ours, just about, you know what I mean? Certainly a lot better than my, you know, in the Philippines, she speaks Tagalog. Most people speak Tagalog or Filipino and I can understand and I can limp through basic conversations, and Chinese as well, Cantonese, a much more difficult language for a lot of reasons, but you know, I can do the things I need to do and have basic social interaction okay with Cantonese as well.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, with my job, I spent a lot of time in Europe as well. The organization I worked for is a European one, so I spent lots of time in France and Belgium and the Netherlands. Probably for about 10 years, I was there just every couple of months for a week or so. And I, you know, I enjoyed that too. And the language and cultural challenges there. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I bet it sounds like it. Yeah. And you're a truck driver. So it all works
and coming back and being a truck driver suits me. Yeah.
Right. You know, it does totally suit you. I mean, I think too is the difference between all the cultures that you've seen, you know, getting over into Europe and seeing the difference and, from, I mean, it's like the United States, only they're individual countries instead of states. You know, it's all together, kind of, you know, kind of mashed into one. And you're getting all these cultures from different, you know, across the border. You know, I mean, you're Germany, France, you know, Belgium. You know, you're looking at places that are all kind of different languages, different cultures, and yet they're all bordered to each other. You know, it's not like they've got an ocean on each side like we have.
Well, yeah, you know, and that comes into play when, you know, because I got to know a lot of, you know, people from those countries quite well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people would pick up on the idea of, you know, I don't want to say like the ugly American, but, you know, why the Americans don't travel well and they don't know things. And I sort of hit them with the idea of, well, listen, when you grew up, when you were young, if you're from the UK, you're from Germany, from Scandinavia, even if you're from a working class family, it doesn't take a lot to get on a train and go vacation in another totally different country for a week, you know, when you're a kid. Now, I don't know about you guys, but growing up in a working class family, if you were to, you know, if someone were to come home and say, you know, I think we're all going to get on a plane and fly to fly to France for a vacation this year. I mean, you know, right. You know, I'll get hit by lightning before that would have happened when I was a little boy. So, you know, yeah. We're geographically, we don't travel, you know, to a lot of other cultures. It just happens to be the way we are. Again, I don't think that that's a bad thing. It's just a fact of life, you know, that we got a great big country that borders another country that's very similar to us. So, you know, we don't do that as often. So, you wouldn't have the Americans traveling to as many places and stuff as often.
In the U.S., you can go anywhere on the four corners and you get a different scenery, different climate. Yeah. I mean, we have rainforest, we have desert, we have everything here. Over in Europe, you go to another country because you want to experience something new. Yeah. Or
right.
Here, a lot of people just don't ever leave the U.S. I know I don't, other than the Caribbean when we just go on cruises. That's just a little...
Yeah, I think they both have advantages and disadvantages. And, you know, it just is the way it is. People need to, you know, I would try to challenge people with that, to say, you know, that's, you know, your own stereotypes are stereotypes, you know, people are the way they are for a lot of different reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
I think it's just really fascinating. I mean, that's such a cool life, dude. I mean, you've really had a very colorful life.
I think I decided, you know, right around that time when I decided to pick up and move over there, I really didn't want to have an entirely kind of normal, everyday, average life. It just wasn't, you know, it was, I when I see that opportunity to do something a little bit strange, I think it sounds like fun. Let's go give it a try, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. It's the right attitude. You know, it's a good attitude to have. I shouldn't say the right attitude, but it's a good attitude to have in today's, you know, more modern world where we're able to travel like we can.
Right.
You know, you can experience a lot more. I mean, this isn't, you know, 1912, you know, where you're getting on the Titanic, hoping to get all the way across, and you know, whatever happens, and because back then people took, you know, month long vacations and touring and stuff like that, you know, where we kind of cram it into a vacation week.
Yeah,
you know,
we have the nature of the stuff. They were riding horses.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it took them a month to get
any of these things. Right.
Well, and then you start driving a truck, and you say, well, when I take time off, now nobody's paying me anything. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had a lot of grand plans in the last 6 years that I sort of looked at it. I said, geez, maybe I ought to sit right here and earn some money, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, the grand plans, unless they're financed.
That's right.
They're just planned.
That's right. Oh,
you get out of your truck. Okay. I'm going to drive across the United States. I can get paid to do that.
Yeah. I think that all the time. Yeah,
I might as well just stay in, stay in my truck and well, come on, hon, we'll go.
That's right. I'll call my boss and say, please try and get me a load to Massachusetts so I can see family. I don't want to have to drive up there on my own dime.
Right.
Right.
Let's make it yours there, boss.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And it's crazy. Yeah, but we have such a huge country.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this really is a big place. You know, we got room everywhere.
And I'd not seen all of the country till I started driving truck again. Right. You know, and I drove for a big, you know, a big flatbed company, you know, pretty well known one. And it took me 10 months to hit every state.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was bouncing around a lot.
7 years. I only hit five or six states.
I've been here 56 years and I haven't hit every freaking state yet.
I think the only one I was really waiting to tick off was to get to the UP in Michigan. And it took me about three years to get up there, to get a load up there, I think. But yeah, when you say you've been there, it means you know what it's like if you're driving a truck. It means you've been through and you park at a truck stop out in the middle of nowhere. But I've been through all those places, you know what I mean, and seen them. So
But it's cool. I mean, it really is neat. And that's one of the fascinating things about being here in the States is that, you know, it is such a big place that, you know, you can, like Mike was saying, you can hit every kind of time zone. You can hit every kind of freaking... you know, weather, you can hit any kind of, you know, climate change, you know, temperate stuff and everything going on.
Not to disparage any other country or nation or world, but we have everything that I really want to see
Here. Sure. Yeah.
Actually, it was interesting for me that the company I work for now is headquarters, a little small company, about 50 trucks in southern Alabama. And I'd never really spent all that much time in the South. And it's been really interesting for me that I, you know, to go down there and sure. Nowadays I'm not hitting every state like I used to working for that, you know, big sort of, not exactly a mega company, but a bigger company. We tend to be out and back, right. Out and back a lot. So I spent a lot of time in the South. And I've, you know, I've gotten more comfortable and learned a lot more about it and how lovely it is down there in many ways. And it's a nice chance to, you know, see things. Plus my daughter went to university. She was born in Hong Kong and she went to university there. Okay. And now is living in Columbia, South Carolina, doing a PhD. And that's sort of my home away from home. When I'm going to get off the road, I go and I spend time with her there. And again, yeah. You know, it's another very southern state and another, you know, interesting view of the world that I didn't have before. So it's nice. It's fun.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. Yeah. That is really cool. What is her course of study?
She's studying to become a school psychologist.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Or possibly a professor, you know, God knows what. She's got a bit of that wanderlust, right. Like, you know, our whole family that, you know, she's also got ideas of possibly doing some of the stuff I'd done with maybe working for international organizations and research overseas and stuff too. So who knows where she'll end up. She'll end up somewhere good. She's a hardworking girl. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That is fantastic. So, yeah. It's really cool, man.
Yeah.
That is really cool. So since you've been driving again, how long did it take you to get your license back when you came back to the States and you wanted to start driving? How long?
I had to be tricky about it. Guys who have CDLs will understand this. The general population doesn't. When I went back, you know, I had been living in Massachusetts. So I went back and I said, hey, if I come back, I could go stay with family and try to get my license back. And they told me, well, no, it's going to take you a year. You're going to have to establish residency, get a normal license, and then, you know, wait a period of time before you can get your CDL. So I said, oh, my God, you know, this whole plan I've got in mind has been dashed. I didn't realize it was going to take that long. So I started looking around, and I realized that all the states have different rules for that. So I decided, finally, I centered on South Dakota, where you can very legally arrive on day one and become a resident. Day two, get your driver's license. Day three, get your CDL permit, and off you go. So I went to South Dakota, and I established my residency and got my permit there. I ended up switching that over to Texas just because I thought, especially doing flatbed, that the job market looked a lot better out of Texas. So I was there for about a week, 2 weeks after, and then went down to Texas and did CDL school in Texas. That took me, I think it's about a month. You know, I didn't do it through a company. I chose very pointfully. I wanted to get my license on my own and pay for it. That way I wasn't beholden to anybody once I had it. You know, that idea of having to either pay them back or commit to a certain amount of time. I wanted to be able to make the choices I wanted to make. So I paid for it, and then I got paid back for it. You know, the company that I hired on with paid me, I can't remember how long it took, but they paid me weekly until that whole amount was paid off that I put into CDL school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if people are thinking to get their CDL, I mean, that would be my personal suggestion. I would, if you can swing it somehow, and I know a lot of community colleges have programs, Workman's retraining programs and stuff will help you get your CDL on your own. I think it really gives you a lot more choices. You can make a plan of your own better than you can getting a company sponsored CDL. I think it's a better idea.
My CDL was through Pitt, Ohio, and I was kind of worried. I had to sign on 3 years.
Right.
And it was like 27 years ago.
Yeah.
Worked out still here, yeah. I was kind of worried, man, 3 years because I was just got.
Well, their math was 1 year equals 9 in real time.
Right.
So, yeah, you're just going to get out of the probationary period.
I think I do agree with you. It is, it gives you more opportunity if you have your life, you know, you get your life on your own. You know, when especially with some of these big companies, you know, I mean, the Schneiders and the, you know, Swifts and stuff like that, you know, you're beholden to them then for a while. Yeah.
And
I don't mean to disparage.
Yeah, no, understood.
If you don't have the money, you can't. I totally understand it. It's still a great career, and you can do a great, you know, earn a great living doing this. And when you get an opportunity to move on, you move on.
Right.
But
I mean, I'm not trying to keep a secret with it or anything, but when I left CDL school, I was down to thinking, well, I knew I wanted to do flatbed for all the reasons we talked about before. And I kind of narrowed it down to Maverick and Melton as the two places I was most interested in. And I believe I ended up choosing Melton. Melton does not do a CDL program. You have to go there with a CDL. And I think Maverick was the same, actually. You know, and if I'd been limited to only, you know, choosing a company, well, those guys would have been off the table for me. I couldn't have done it. You know, right. So I think there are some advantages to getting it on your own, if you can do it, if you can do it. But if you can't, man, just jump on, get it done, get your license, and 6 months later, break free and do whatever you want to do. You know, it works both ways.
For your time, Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Like you said, a lot of states have with unemployment office, they have, like, we have Career Link here in Pennsylvania. And my wife, when my wife was going through it at Career Link, she didn't go for truck driving, but that was one of the courses they were really trying to recruit people to come in.
Right.
You know, so it's that's the way to do it. The state pays for everything.
Yeah.
If you do it through the state, you're not beholden to any trucking company.
Yeah.
The state paid for it. You may, you know, that's like part of your unemployment there.
Yeah. Job retraining.
Continuing education.
When I was in CDL school, I think I'm guessing there were 10, 15 of us. In this particular class I was in, and everyone except for one other guy were doing it that route, you know, through the local government. And I've forgotten, you said, is it the welfare office or not welfare? It's unemployment office. That it was a benefit and a job retraining course. And most of them, I remember that at least, you know, when I left, I don't know what happened to these guys afterwards, except for one of them who's a buddy of mine. But most of them didn't want to go over the road. They were all looking for local jobs. I know a lot of the guys went for hauling, you know, cement trucks, and that's a pretty common one. And you know, school buses, I think. There were a lot of different recruitment opportunities. But he and I were the only ones that were looking to go, you know, go out and go over the road. And we both ended up going to Melton. He a little bit later than I, but we both headed out and wanted to do. I was a little bit surprised by that, but yeah.
No, I would never. God bless all the guys who drive over the road. I can't. That it doesn't even compute in my head, that kind of lifestyle.
I
just can't imagine living in a truck like that.
I said to myself, and as I often have with things, you know, with all the upheaval it caused in my life to come back and do this and commit to it, I said, no matter what, I'm going to do it for a year, whether I love it or I hate it. I am going to stick in this for a year, and then I'll reassess and see what I want to do. And I realized after a year that I really like it. I enjoy it. Matter of fact, I noticed that when I first started, not that I've always gone kind of light. I moved to Asia with just one bag and I made it there. But on the truck, the amount of stuff that I have on the truck has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller over the years. Yeah. You know, I really enjoy living with less stuff. I think that suits a trucker's lifestyle a bit. So I don't know.
Yeah. It makes life a lot easier to travel around in.
Yeah.
You know, when you do more minimalist type of
Not only that, approach. I mean, you know, it makes the whole new meaning of the word bug out bag, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You got it, man.
And truck catches fire. You're not emptying out that whole entire cab.
Grab your bag and go.
Grab a bag and you're out.
Yeah, 45 minutes, I'm gone, man. I could be in another country.
Amen, brother.
That's right. If I have to run away from my wife, she's small, but she's mean.
She can find you.
She'd find me.
I think most of us would attest that our wives would eventually find us.
Indeed.
No matter how long it takes.
There's no escape. There's no escape.
Oh, well. You know what? After 36 years, there's no. I'm not escaping any place at this point.
I'm with you.
It is what it is. And I just find it's fascinating. It is such a fascinating life that you have, and you have led, and what you're doing now. Like Mike said, you know, my hat's off to guys who can do it in a truck and sleep there and work there, and you know, and you make it work, and you're happy, and you're doing it. and you know, you're well adjusted. You know what I mean? Like I would, I know me, I know my mindset. I would not be so well adjusted.
There are days, just like anybody would say, where it's, you know, it's a challenge and we don't like it. But you know, I know you guys have talked to a buddy of mine who put me on to you guys, London Mike. Mike came over to this small company. He and I were acquainted when I worked at Melton, and I found out there was an opening. I said, come on, Mike, you know, give it a try and apply. But he and I have talked about this idea that, you know, when we first started working for that big company, you know, and you have forced dispatch, you can't control your loads out. Now, nowadays, I probably could object to loads or say, I don't want to do, but generally I know that. Yeah, we can talk about why in a little while. One of the big advantages, I think, but generally they're going to send me to places where I'm going to make the most money. So I don't often object to a load, almost never. But there was an idea when I worked at this other company, and Mike and I have talked about this a couple of times. That you know, you finish a load, you submit your paperwork, and you sit there, and you know, 15 minutes later, you're wondering, hey man, where am I going to go? It's like you know, you're rolling the wheel of fortune, you know. I could be going to Maine. I could be going to Arizona. I could be going to Washington. And I like that. There's a little bit of excitement there, a little bit of a thrill of, gee, I wonder where I'm going to go in a couple of minutes. And then once you know, you know, you've got two, 3 days, my next two, 3 days is set and I'm, you know, going to work. And I always work quite hard. I always try to, you know, get as many miles in as I can and, you know, earn more money if nothing else. But, you know, your life becomes 1 day, 2 day, 3 day blocks, and then it turns off, and you sit there again. And you say, "Right, where am I going to go? I don't know. Let's roll that wheel again. Let's see where I end up." And there's something that's kind of fun, kind of addictive about that. I think being OTR. Mike and I both talked about it. We liked it. Yeah.
Well, were you ever apprehensive about that? Like, did it ever, like when you first started doing it, and you don't know, like you're just kind of getting into the industry, and you're not sure where you're going, and you don't even know, you know, how to get from place to place other than yet you got to sit down, look at your map and figure it out. Were you ever apprehensive
No, I thought it was a kick. I thought it was a thrill. That part of the job didn't trouble me a bit. You know, I think one of the things that I thought was good, having driven a truck when I was younger, I worked for a local company doing Class B flatbed. Now, again, it's a very different thing driving a smaller straight truck. But delivering mostly building supplies and things, and we would take those trucks into places that you know you wouldn't want to bring a pickup truck a lot of times, you know. So I'd been through that and done that for a while. So I always felt quite confident that you know I can get this truck in somewhere and not worry about it too much. So I didn't worry about that stuff too much. Backing up without killing somebody or ruining things. Yeah, it took me a while to get used to that. That's for sure for all of us. Right. But, you know, the driving part of it, I found exciting. I wasn't too apprehensive about. The only thing I was very apprehensive about was having to spend 3 weeks with a trainer in a truck. And it was about as challenging as I expected it to be. The guy that I went with, you know, Henry, if you're listening, he taught me a lot. This guy knew how to flatbed. He knew how to drive hard. I'll give him all the credit in the world. Would I want to spend three weeks on a truck again with him? God, no. You know, that's not fun. That is not fun. Part I worried about. And it's that, that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I you know, you got to learn to be okay with living with somebody else who you don't really know when you first meet them.
Yeah.
You know, and you first get... And it's not like you get to meet them and get to know them and say, hey, spend a couple of days together. It's you meet them and you're living together, you know?
Well, you meet them with a bag on your hand. Bag in your hand, exactly. And they're like, hey, throw it up in the truck. We're leaving in 20 minutes. And that's what it is.
Yep. It is. But, yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, I think it's a... I mean, the people you get to meet doing this job is fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, even doing it the way we do it.
Hey, truckers, ever find yourself miles from home and running low on your daily meds? Don't worry, we've got your back. Meet Refill Genie, the telehealth service designed just for folks like us who are always on the move. Whether you're crossing state lines or hauling coast to coast, Refill Genie connects you with a licensed doctor to refill your existing prescriptions hassle-free. No more detours or long waits at the clinic. Just hop online and get your meds and keep on trucking. Use code HLL for a 15% off your order. So head over to refillgenie.com and keep your health and gear wherever.
Yeah, we get to meet and see different people and engage with other characters. Right. One way or the other, you can get in there something. You
try
know?
To avoid that as much as possible.
Which is why we work at night.
Well, I work during the day, and I try to make myself scarce with people. I don't want nothing to do with it.
Well, there's a job right there for you, then, to be a truck driver. You know, people who can't spend time alone as well, they're not going to be happy in this job. You got to be able to 100%. Spend time on your own and be comfortable with yourself, or you're going to be really unhappy.
Yes, that is very true.
I'm the only person I can stand.
You know, can I turn the tables on you guys and ask you a question? Because, you know, I have a feeling that I think this job is more tailored to a guy. I'm in my, you know, mid-50s, that it's more tailored to older guys. I think it suits us a little bit better. Even though I'm doing flatbed, which is physically challenging and, you know, hard to get out and do sometimes, and it hurts a lot. But I think I've got the feeling that, you know, young guys – you know, or young ladies, you know, I've met plenty of female flatbedders. I'm seeing more and more of them as time goes on, and good on them, man. I think it's great. But young people, you know, you've got a big social network, you know, you're dating. There's a lot of things that are going to want to pull you home where you're not going to want to spend a lot of time alone. Or you have children, you know, being an OTR truck driver with children, man, I never would have done it. But my kids are big. They're settled in a career. You know, my wife can come on the road with me. This job it's not that hard. It's not that isolating for me. For young people, I think it'd be tough. I don't know if I could do it. I wonder if you guys agree.
I always said that over the road was for the guy that's just learning how to drive truck, or the guy that's divorced four times down the road and finally figured out it. Not them, it's him. And, you know, back on the road at 45, 50.
Fair enough.
But, you know, for two reasons. The person that's the young and just coming out of the gate there, you know, they can see the whole, you know, see the entire United States, do whatever. They can get their teeth cut in the job itself and kind of get a feel what's required and where they want to go. And 5 years down the road after, you know, 29, 30, if they're starting at 24, 23, they can decide where they want to move their career to as far as LTL or, you know, private hauling for other people that has set hours, you know, recalibrate the lifestyle at that point.
Yeah. But I also,
but I mean, I know guys that turned around and, you know, 45, 50, I'm going to buy my own truck to start going on the road,
which is, you know, for me at, you know, I'm, you know, mid-50s. I mean, we're all in our 50s.
Right.
I'm past that click.
Spot. Yeah.
But, I'm close on your heels.
But I think, you know, when I think about young people getting, I think there's wisdom in what you're saying there, you know, that it's going to be hard on them because they have, especially this, you know, these younger generations compared to us, compared to what we grew up in the 80s, you know, 70s and 80s, you know, we're looking at it, you know, these kids nowadays they seem to be much more connected, you know, to each other. Like they're on their social media all the time. Doing stuff all the time. They're going away all the time. And so to actually separate themselves from that, to actually be alone and isolate themselves in a truck, I think for them is going to be, it could be a very difficult task.
They've already said that since COVID, that's been a problem with a lot of the younger kids. They've isolated themselves and all they have is online. And they say it's not good for your mental health. I was like, I don't know. Being alone is great for my mental health.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, they're
rolling in a traveling prison cell for 9 months out of the year is not such a good thing for your mental health either, but you can survive it, I guess.
Right. These kids nowadays, they have a panic attack if their battery on their cell phone goes bad.
Right. You know, I say that, but, you know, I've met some young guys often just, you know, in the truck stop or the fuel island talking, you know, people say something. And I met some young guys who I think are doing it, man. They'll say, listen, I'm living in my truck. You know, I go crash with my brother, my sister, my mom, my dad, you know, when I need a week off every couple of months, and they'll say, I'm going to do this for 2 years, 3 years. And I met one guy who said, my goal is to get 100,000 in the bank. And he said, I'm well on my way. He said he was really close after, you know, 2.5 years, man. If you're doing it for that reason, with that plan, what a great plan that is for a young kid to come out here and just, you know, put sock away every penny and then go do whatever it is you want to do with six figures in the bank to do it with. It's a great plan.
How about it? And that, well, that's just it. It's having a plan.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually having having something in mind that you want to accomplish. Yep. You know, if you're just coming at this with no kind of plan, no thought, no, you're just going to do this and I'm going to do this for a living and I'm going to drive and that's it. And you really don't have a reason. You don't have a plan. You don't have any kind of anything you're looking forward to doing. I think that's, you know.
And unrealistic expectations. They come in, they want a new truck right away.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you mean we have to work 60 hours? No, like, I want to work 40
to the world.
Yeah, it's like, that's not trucking.
You know, I would say this to my kids too. And, you know, I'm really proud of my kids, but I'll say, you know, have a plan. Mm-hmm. And if things change, you can always change your plan. Just have a plan.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Exactly. It's a good way to do it.
You know, because you have, it is. You have to be, you know, a plan is intact until things change.
Yeah.
Because then you've got to be willing to adjust that plan. You know, I was watching it's stupid aside here, but it's an aside. One of the Civil War generals had an attitude of you have your major plan of attack and it's that plan until you engage the enemy. And then you have to be willing to change. You know, because you don't know what you're going to run into.
Right.
Like Mike Tyson. That's really life.
Mike Tyson said, everybody got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah, that is a great one, isn't it? And I can, having boxed for a number of years in Hong Kong, I can attest to that. Boy, you get hit in the face and a lot of plans go right out the window when somebody makes contact with your nose.
Yeah, it's probably a good time to make a change.
Got the whole fight in your head. This is how it's going to go. I'm going to punk him. He's going to fall.
I've been there.
No, man, that really hurt.
But it's just the reality to it. We have to be willing to make changes as we move forward. Because if you don't, you're not moving forward anymore. You know, you've got to keep. And so having a plan, I think, is a really smart way of approaching, especially a job like this.
Right.
You know, you have to have a thought in mind as to what you want to do.
Especially what you're doing over the road. You've got to have that takes planning. I mean, we go to work. We know we're coming home for the most part. We're coming home every day, unless we have to lay out because of weather or something. But that's rare.
Right.
We know we're coming home. We know basically what our week is going to look like. Like you said, you have a 3-day block and then, what's going to happen after that?
I'm lucky to be in a place now. In a company now where, you know, I generally do know where I'm going, you know, ahead of time. Not always, though, especially the last, you know, 6 months, things have not been great. You know, we all know we're all struggling out here and having a harder time. So, you know, there are plenty of days where I've got that same old thing where we don't know where we're going next. But quite often I do. And you know, I guess that's nice. It means I can plan home time a little bit better. I get home a lot more now than I would have, when I first started. Or I say home. Home is, home is the Philippines for me, to be honest, or the truck. But back to my daughter's place in Colombia, and it's nice to be able to come off the road a little bit more. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
Are you an owner operator with that company?
I'm not. I'm a company driver. There certainly are some owner operators. There's quite a few. I kind of thought after I was a couple of years in and, you know, I wanted to do a couple of years with one company because I know it just, you know, having worked most of my life, stability looks good, you know, to everybody. Jumping around doesn't look great. So after those couple of years, I thought, do I want to, you know, try to become an owner op? And I realized, you know, that I think, you know, being then I would have been 55, I think 54. If you could roll the dice, you know, and maybe I would have come out ahead in my early 60s when I'm planning to retire. But, you know, an engine failure and a transmission failure, and I'd be behind the ball, you know. Had I been late 40s, I think I definitely would have looked to go owner op. I think mid-50s, the financial, you know, chance didn't necessarily work in my favor. You know, I found a place where I think I'm doing pretty well. I get paid percentage. I'm not working cents per mile. I'm not. So I've got some of the benefits that, you know, you might have as an owner op. I feel like anybody trucking, this is my own feeling, there are a lot of ways to do it. But if you've got a place where you're working a percentage and it's a real percentage of the rate con and you see the rate cons, you know, it's none of this, what do they call it? Load rate or whatever that some of these places play. That's just a made up sort of number that they pay you a percentage of.
Right.
Then you remove you know, there's adversarial relationships sometimes when you have an employer, you know, where they're trying to pay you less and they're trying to earn more. And that's business. That's life. But I think when you work for percentage for somebody, if they earn more money, you earn more money. Do you know what I mean? So I don't have that inherent conflict with my boss, with my company when it comes to making money, because we're both looking for the highest paying loads, you know, to get out there and do. So there's no conflict that way. And man, I prefer it. It's a better system of work in this weird, archaic system that we have of trucking. The way we all get paid is really odd. Percentage is the way to go if you can get it. Yeah.
It's amazing how many different types of getting paid there is in this industry.
It really is.
Percentages.
By the load. I think, you know, if you're a local guy, you know, getting paid hourly, that's fantastic as well. But, you know, doing OTR, I don't see how that system works. I don't see how it's feasible. I think percentage is probably the best way for them to set it up and do it.
But I think the mindset that, you know, everybody wants to make as much as they can. The driver wants to make as much as they can. The owner wants to make as much as they can.
Yeah.
And if everybody would keep that mindset, that'd be great.
Right.
You know, because it's that should be the goal. Be the goal for us all. You know, is everybody wants to make as much as they possibly can. I want to make sure that Pitt, Ohio is making as much as they can because I want to continue to be employed at Pitt, Ohio. You know, I don't want to be able to change and I don't want to like another job.
Yeah, when you're getting paid cents per mile, though, I never really felt it, but it's easy to have those thoughts creep in your mind of, man, are they holding me back? Are they putting other people forward? Do you know what I mean? Is how come this guy's getting more miles? Am I getting more miles? Or why am I getting more miles? Guys are complaining they're not getting miles. I don't have to deal with any of those thoughts. You know what I mean? I'm entirely confident that they're going to get me the best they can. Sorry?
Yes.
For us, it's not seniority based. You're not worried about somebody else getting more miles than you that it doesn't have more seniority. But where it gets frustrating is when you have to stand around and wait and you're not getting paid.
Right.
That's
without a mile.
It isn't fun.
It's no fun. It's no fun. It's no fun dropping a load off on a Friday afternoon knowing that, you know, there's no load coming until Monday morning. That's just a horrible it's a horrible Friday feeling. Yeah.
I can imagine,
Yeah.
But then again, you know, you got a couple of days off, so you know you can relax. And,
yeah,
if you're at home, that's
though. Great. You know, if you're home, it's great. Out here on the road, my general attitude is, I do not want to be sitting in this truck not getting paid.
Brian would love to spend his time in Newark, New Jersey on a weekend.
100%, that's where I want to be. You know, Saturday, New York City. You know,
Saturday night fun night at the TA.
Nowhere more exciting than a truck stop.
exactly. You know, we've all sat there, and you know, it's a blast. It's a blast. So
I think
go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking the worst feelings of sitting. I remember that, you know, going through, you know, Wyoming. Actually, it could be any time of year going through Wyoming. I had a high foam load. And I sat in Wamsutter, you know, out there on I-80 for, I think, 3.5 days. Beautiful blue skies, you know, all the heavy loads are coming in and out and going. High wind warnings. I sat there for 3.5 days, not earning a penny because I couldn't roll. And I'll tell you, Wamsutter is not a place you want to spend 3 days in if you can avoid it. There's nothing there but plains and dirt.
I like that. Well, the interesting thing about Shoeville is that I live here.
Right.
So it's interesting to me.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. Beautiful up there. But, you know, when you're sitting in a truck babysitting a load, you know what I mean? That's not fun.
Yep.
That's not fun.
And you're not making any money. You're right. That is it. Because no matter how you slice it, at the end of the day in this industry, everybody's doing this job for one. Yeah. You know, the main thing that we're doing this for is a paycheck at the end of the week.
You may love your job, but you want that money. The reason you're doing it is for money.
It's for money.
You're earning.
Yep.
If you're working for a good employer, then I think they're going to be looking for that in you too. Man, if you want to sit out here on our equipment and not work, go find a job somewhere else, man. This is, you know, you're costing us all money. I understand that.
Yep.
Incentive on their side too.
Yeah, because they're not paying for a truck to have it just sit still.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's the reality of it. So in this industry, they've got to be moving, or nobody's earning anything.
Yeah, you have to. You got to sort of change your way of looking at things a bit doing this job for sure. Yeah.
Time off in this industry is,
10 hours at a time.
10 hours at a time.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. But, you know, and anybody who's done it for a while, too, they know that, you know, as, you know, for over OTR truckers, you know, home time is inviolate. You know what I mean? And if you have, how many times have you guys talked to people or yourselves or seen people? You quit. Why do people quit jobs? A lot of the time it's over. That company told me they get me home on Wednesday. They didn't get me home until Friday. You know, and right. It's upsetting enough that they'll say, a good job. People will say, screw it. I'm gone. You know, this is what you promised me. It's that important, I think, you know, getting that home time.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. It is. It you know, because that's what keeps you connected.
Yeah.
That's what keeps you connected to your life. Otherwise, your life is just going by and you're not living it.
Yeah.
You know, you're just, you know, which and you want to. You know, you want to be part of it.
Too, but with the younger generation, it's going to be hard to tell these younger kids, no, we're just going to keep you out for 3 weeks at a shot. Yeah. I don't see younger kids wanting to do that. I mean, the older guys that have that good work, that work ethic from like years ago, all right, well, I'll drive another week, you know, I'll get home to see my kids when I, the younger people, I just don't see them doing that.
I
wouldn't want to do that. Right.
When you see the young kids realize too, that if you want to go home every 3 weeks, you're also not going to earn much money. You better be staying out 2 months if you want to earn money. And when they hear that, you know, you can see the faces just drop like, oh man, this is not what I signed on for. And I understand it. I understand it. I get it. Yeah.
But you know, if they actually try and give it an honest chance,
right.
They'll find that they like it.
They might.
It's that kind of thing, you know? Yeah.
Or if they can just bite the bullet and do it for 2 or 3 years and save up that money, you know, not buy Ski-Doos and boats and fancy trucks, you know, they're putting themselves ahead for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we are watching life go by to a point, like it or not, you know, out here on the road, you are.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I was just saying to my wife today, and I think I said that to Mike sitting at the table downstairs. I can't believe it's November. You know, you look at the calendar, November 3rd, where'd the year go?
Yeah.
I mean, we're 2 months from Christmas, 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And you just look at it and you're like, how'd that happen? You know, we are watching our lives because you do a lot, you work a lot in this industry.
You do. That's one of the things I think it must be most challenging for you guys. That, you know, you to try have to go to work. I know you guys, I'm sure, are working 12 hours, 14 hour days a lot of the time. That's a tough life, you know, getting home and going to bed and just getting up and going straight back to work. Yeah,
that's it. That is it. It's why sometimes, you know, when you're having a conversation with somebody who works in an office and they're like, you know, they're doing the 9-to-5 and they're complaining because they're tired. You don't know what tired is. Let me tell you.
Me work an hour of overtime.
But at the same time, I get it. You know, people are creatures of habit and they like their 9-to-5. And when that's disrupted, I get it. I mean, I do because we get upset when our lives are upturned a little bit. Just the reality of it.
My longest period on the truck was, I think it was about 9.5 months without taking any time off. And I'll tell you, the reason for it too was during COVID, because I did take some time off and I sat in a hotel and there was nowhere to go. I said, man, I could be sitting in my truck right now earning money. So why am I taking time off? So I went, but I would never do it again. Cause I don't know where the magic sort of number is, but somewhere around 5-6 months, you start to become kind of a different strange person when you're on a truck for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, your social skills and the way you interact with people starts to change a little bit. So I'll never do that again. Yeah. That was too long to be on a truck.
Yeah. You start listening to the voices in your own head, don't you?
Without a doubt.
You start having little friends that are called Wilson.
That's too long to be on a truck. Too long to be on a truck.
Yeah. Your interpersonal skills kind of lapse, you know, but
yeah.
It is what it is, you know. It's amazing, and COVID was a totally different time for everybody.
Yeah,
you know, it was beautiful to be a driver.
Oh, the roads were clear and wide open.
Wasn't it nice
when everybody was on?
The cities were so nice to come through during COVID. Yeah, I have to say that. That was really nice.
Now all the idiots are back on the road.
I don't know if you guys have this, but I know that for me, you know, a couple of the guys I work with, you know, we're good friends. We spend a lot of time talking on the phone, you know, and it's as though we're sitting next to each other driving. But, you know, we work for the same company. Sure. Mike's one of them. My buddy Sam's another one. You know, we'll call each other a couple times a day. People tease it. You know, I talk to him more than I talk to my wife, you know, one of my buddies. And you know, it's like we're sitting next to each other, driving down the road, having a chat. And it not only passes the time, it keeps you, you know, the social interaction. It keeps you linked to other people. Yeah. You know, it really helps you out here. You know, I didn't do OTR back in the late 80s, early 90s when I started. I did a couple small regional trips every now and then, you know, just that came up. But that's a different life. You know, before cell phones and you know, being able to do video calls and things, this must have been a very different job doing OTR then, boy. More challenging.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So quiet.
100%. I think, you know, honestly, I think back to like, you know, the 60s and the, you know, and 70s. And I think about drivers being out there not having that connection.
Yeah.
Your only connection was your CB radio. That was it.
Yep. You know, you could pocket full of change and a payphone.
You know, you could not be connected on a moment's notice to call somebody or whatever. Like that, some of the luxuries that we have today, you know, just different. It's just it was different, you know. Well, Joe, this has been a lot of fun. This has been a blast. Thank you so much for giving us. We really enjoyed this, and I really do. If you would just hang on with us for a few minutes after we sign off, and just make sure everything uploads and all that stuff. But we just want to say thank you so much for coming on and just sharing your story and
very interesting getting a perspective of a flatbedder.
Yeah, it really is. It really
driving
is.
Big boxes around is totally different.
It is. Yep. Yep. So thank you so much. Oh man, it was a pleasure. It was a real pleasure. And we hope you enjoyed yourself. We hope everybody out there enjoyed this show. And if they enjoyed this show, Shipper, what can they do?
They can share the show. Share it with anybody and everybody.
Amen, brother. On every kind of social media platform and even things that aren't social media platforms, you know, just the people that you know.
Or old school. Put it up on the bathroom wall, as Mike said.
That's right.
For a good time with him to Hammerland Legends.
And then sometimes even just, you know, we'll just fill it with the generic 8675309. You know, a little bit Jamie. Tommy Two Tone. So, with all that being said, keep the hammer down.
Hammer Lane. Good night.
Good night.